It's Ian Pickus here in the Congressional Corner. We've been speaking with David Hawkins, senior editor of the American Leader. He formerly worked at the Fulcrum and CQ and Roll Call. You know, David, you are a journalistic lifer, and there's a lot of soul searching happening among reporters of late, given the fact that, you know, all of the sort of potential drawbacks of a second Trump term were well documented by a press corps that has treated the last decade like a dog with a bone, to be honest. And yet it seems many of those stories and revelations didn't make much of an impact with voters who increasingly do not trust what they read, if they read it at all. Where do you think American journalism is at this changing moment?
Well, I think you've described it super, super crisply and well. There is a despondency. There is some soul searching. I'm going to be 65 in January. So my journalistic life is, you know, it's time for people like me to not be making these decisions. It's time for younger, smarter people to be making these decisions. What do I know? I'm the dog with the bone. All I know how to do is go and find good, compelling stories that will educate voters and hopefully make them shape their behavior accordingly. No amount of doing that with Donald Trump has worked. I don't know what other choice we have. And, you know, having done this now since my time at the Albany Times Union in the late 1970s, that's what I know how to do. I don't know what else are we supposed to do other than cover Donald Trump. I mean, I think we have to cover Donald Trump like a force that the country has not ever seen before. And covering him in that way is not to disregard the angst, the concern, the worry, the angerness of the people who elected him president. And somehow I guess we have to figure out a way to explain that to the country, that just because we are covering him aggressively and because we cover every president aggressively, but he looks, from what he said in the campaign, like he's going to need more eyeballs and more scrutiny than ever. To do that does not mean we disrespect his voters and his base, and I don't know how we do that. And I'm glad that my journalistic life is nearing its sell-by date.
Let's talk about what they actually want to do. As we speak, you know, we're still counting votes on some key House races, but it looks like Republicans will have unified government in Washington or something very close to it. Separate from the personality part of this, what are the policies that they're likely to put in place given all of that sort of veto-proof power?
Well, the list is long. I mean, the president-elect has, and future president, former and future, has a pretty long list. Trade will be, you know, his vow to impose tariffs. There's some debate about how much of that he can do unilaterally by executive order and how much he would need to ask for Congress. That would be a major economic move. He has promised another tax cut. He has promised to significant spending, domestic spending cuts, and has signaled that, you know, nobody other than Elon Musk is going to help him do that. And whether he tries to do that without Congress, even, or whether he even asks Congress, which would probably go along with him, I don't know. You know, Ukraine funding, future funding for the war in Ukraine doesn't look good. Scaling back environmental regulations. What he's promised to do on day one by executive order or by proposal to Congress is a pretty extensive list. So in that way, to go back to your previous question, simply covering the policies as they unfold and as they get meat on the bones is one thing that, you know, that was sort of the journalistic role that I played for so long in Washington, was actually covering policy and the development of policy and what it said about how a president was going to be. So I think we are, I think it's going to be an enormous agenda that is which are going to be the true priorities. We don't yet understand. He will have potentially two, remembering that the two most conservative members of the veterans on the Supreme Court, Clarence Thomas and Sam Alito, are both in their now second half of their 70s. Both are politically savvy, and both may. Clarence Thomas is now almost the longest-serving justice in American history. Both may decide during the upcoming term to retire, so that a Donald Trump and a Republican Senate can make sure that they're filled. That would make Donald Trump the first president since, I believe, Franklin Roosevelt to put a majority on the court. So it's going to be an intense time.
Speaking of which, there's some pressure from the left on Justice Sotomayor to step down while President Biden could still get a younger replacement in, which she seems to be resisting. What do you think of that effort?
I think she has signaled that she's not going to do that. The time is very short. Remembering that, Chuck Schumer has to hand the keys to the majority leader's office over on January 3rd. So that's even shorter than January 20th. So the time is extremely tight. They would have to have a nominee essentially ready to go. It's been done in such a short time. I should have looked this up, thinking you might ask me this. How many days went by between when Justice Ginsburg died and when Justice Barrett was confirmed? It was only 7 or 8 weeks, I think.
Yeah, a couple months.
So it is possible. It is high risk, however. There are only 51 Democratic senators. Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema are not lockstep Democrats. There are several Democrats who are retiring and just want to get out of Dodge and don't want to have to spend, Christmas Eve and New Year's Eve and New Year's Day slogging through a nomination to get it done. There are lots of ways that Republicans can slow it down. They couldn't stop it. So everything would have to go just right. And if it didn't go just right, Donald Trump would have a seat to fill on January 20th. So that's a pretty high risk. It's high risk, high reward, but it is very high risk. It's also a bit ageist. Sonia Sotomayor is only 70 years old. Yes, she has diabetes. She doesn't complain to be in really bad health. So to push somebody out like that, I think, is a little bit antithetical to what most Democrats say they believe, is that we shouldn't be ageist.
Yeah, so that leads me to this next question. Do you think Democrats should be looking at how they play the game? President Biden hosted President Trump for a transition meeting in the Oval Office. Vice President Harris conceded her loss. And it seems to me that this is a sort of a unilateral approach to some of the norms that we're very used to in this country.
Well, right. So thank heavens those two things both happened. I would say, we've got to try and go back to norms. Yes, there are some who say, the Democrats keep losing because they keep playing fair, and why don't they play unfair like the Republicans? I guess call me old-fashioned, but I don't think that's the right way to do it. I think you've got to try and remind the country what the norms are whenever you can. But maybe that's naive.
So I just want to end by asking about Mike Johnson. And I should say, as we speak, we don't know yet if he'll remain as speaker, but it's certainly looking that way. And what does this election do to his fractious conference, the House Freedom Caucus, that made such trouble for House Republicans in the last term?
I think it will shut them up for a while. I think Mike Johnson is now definitely in Donald Trump's good graces. Victory assuages lots of anger and lots of belly aching. And they now are, yes, I think you're right, as we speak now, the calls are not official, but I think it's mathematically almost a certainty that the Republicans will have control of the House and therefore a trifecta. So, the ability to actually get things done, to actually move policy, will be absolutely the tonic that Mike Johnson needs to you know, keep the critics off of his back for a while. And I don't think they will be critics. I think you know, he'll be able to give them enough to keep them happy. And so he should have every likelihood that he'll remain an unchallenged speaker for at least the next 2 years.
We've been speaking with David Hawkings, senior editor of the American Leader and formerly of the Fulcrum and CQ and Roll Call on the Congressional Corner. David, it's great having your post-election thoughts, and I hope you won't hang it up too soon, because we'll want to talk to you in the new year when the new Congress and the new president take office.
Okay, I'll stick around. Thank you very much, Ian.